You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
When it's extra steamy and it's extra muggy and you're looking to get out of the sun. When it's summertime and the sun is bright and you want to have a little fun. Sci-Fi July! Sci-Fi July! Sci-Fi J-Lie! J-Lie? You bet! Sci-Fi July! Sci-Fi J-Lie! No, I cannot lie, and I cannot lie. It's me, Jay. What? J-Lie. Sci-Fi July. Who is that guy? Said his name was Jay, but I'd never seen him before. Sci-Fi July. Music.
Welcome to the New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
Hang on to your shorts. We're going to dump.
And Erica.
When in doubt, let's just explore this dark sinkhole. Am I right? Tie me up. Let's go. Let's go. It's dark out. We don't have a lot of supplies. Somebody grab this rope. I'm going down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, why do backpacks have to have full body straps? They can just hang on your shoulder, right?
Nope.
Just kind of nestle onto your shoulder like someone's giving you a little massage. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't that exist in the real world?
Hey, can I put a backpack on that also massages me? Sign me up. I want that.
Yeah, I love that.
You have caught us in the middle of Sci-Fi July, an infinity of titles, where we're going to talk about the sci-fi movies released by New World Pictures. And for this episode, we have brought back a special guest, somebody who kicked us off on probably our initial Sci-Fi July, actor, filmmaker, Tarek Davis. Welcome back to the show.
Yes, I am happy to be here. All the technical issues we can fix in post, just like the backpack straps were supposed to be fixed in post. I don't know if you guys read that.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first like use of green screen. '81, like putting in the backpack straps. They wanted to start small.
Yep.
Like, everything else is gonna be practical, but those backpack straps. Yeah, baby. Wave of the future.
And Derek, of course, brought us originally Android, a movie we had never heard of, but now we have brought a movie to you, Derek, that you have never seen before.
I had never seen this. And yes, I refer to Android as Seinfeld in space. It works.
Yep.
But this movie, I was like, Galaxy of Terror, the title sounds really familiar. And then when I watched it today. I had the afternoon and I was like, okay, this is a movie I have not seen. And it was streaming on YouTube.
Okay.
For free. And I clicked play. It's an hour and 20 minutes. And I was surprised by all the recognizable faces that we will get into. I was constantly surprised. I didn't know it was possible to be surprised so much. There's just constant surprisal. It doesn't stop. You think it's surprising? There's not like a theme so much as an emotion, an intent. Performances, they're all over the place, baby. surprising performances.
Surprising. It's filled with surprises.
dare I say, from bad to good.
Yes.
Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. The surprising. Full spectrum. The full mm-hmm. spectrum. Yeah.
They're checked out. There's some performances that are checked out. Like, I, but, you know, maybe that's how you have to play a man without fear. I don't know.
Okay, well, of course, with all that, you know, we're talking about a very special film, 1981's Galaxy of Terror.
Prepare yourself for the ultimate battle. Galaxy of Terror. Hell has just been relocated. It orbits a burned-out star at the edge of the galaxy.
They're out there.
It's been waiting a billion years to scare you to death. Trapped in a living maze of terror.
The odds of us getting out of here.
Play the odds. We lose.
Stranded astronauts Edward Albert and Aaron Moran battle hordes of hideous shadow demons, encounter the razor-sharp living glass, brave the pit of doomed souls, just to discover the only way out is death. No! Galaxy of Terror. The ultimate horror in space.
Wow.
That's right. 1981's Galaxy of Terror, a.k.a. Planet of Horrors, a.k.a. Mind Warp, an Infinity of Terror, a.k.a. Planet of Horrors again, brought to you by real books. Yeah, real. Touch it. Here, hold this book. Hold it. No, look, don't be afraid of the book. Don't be afraid of the book. Here, hold this book. It's a real book. Don't walk away.
I don't want
to. Read a book.
I don't like it.
Read a book.
I don't want it to touch my hands. No. I don't like that.
This movie was directed.
You gotta support real books, man. You gotta support real books.
You gotta support real books.
Not in space.
You got to.
I read space. I exclusively read space books, which are real different than real books.
If you read over 100 space books, real space books this summer, guess what you get at the end? Some hot pizza.
Ooh, okay, yeah. I'm listening. Yeah. I'm listening.
Wow. Hot pizza.
Ooh. Hot pizza.
In space, it's exclusively cold pizza, so this is a real treat.
And in real space, treat. You can't judge a book by its cover because they have no covers. It's
There's just no covers.
White page.
No.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who knows what you're going to read? You never know. It's crapshoot.
This movie tells us the publishing industry is taking a massive dive. So that means that this movie takes place in 5 years.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
This movie was directed by Bruce D. Clark. He's a New Zealand native. He was recommended to Corman out of UCLA grad school, and he made a 1969 biker film called Naked Angels that Corman put up the money for, which New World picked up as a co-feature for its first ever release, Angels Die Hard. So that's two biker films in one at the drive-in for you. And he co-wrote this film with writer-actor Mark Siegler, who also co-wrote Naked Angels, though this would be their last collaboration. And indeed, this is the last film directed by Clark. Roger Corman told John Stanley in August 1981 how Clark came to the project. He said, "After Battle Beyond the Stars, I wanted to produce a terror film set in space. I spread the word around Hollywood." Sure you did, Roger.
Hey, buddy. Anyway. Hey, buddy. What are you doing? Just reading the paper. I'm making some space movies. Pass it on.
Tell all your industry buddies. Don't tell your regular buddies.
Yeah, friends. Man, this is a Denny's, man. I don't... Yeah, just spread the word. Spread the word.
I've done my job. Back to the office. Bruce Clark and Mark Siegler, who made the Naked Angels for me, struck on a simple concept. Oh, did they? Okay. An alien presence creates a different kind of horror in the mind of each of the characters. Mm. I gave the go-ahead. And it stars an incredible cast. Unbelievable. Yeah. In brief, Edward Albert, who was coming off of a Golden Globe nomination for 1972's Butterflies Are Free. And importantly, he was in 1980s when time ran out because David Decoteau, who went on to become a director of hundreds of movies, at the time was a PA. It was a young PA working on this movie, and he was hired by New World to go out and have like three actors' pictures, one of which was Edward Albert, and see who would they like to see in a movie. And he thought Edward Albert looked really good in When Time Ran Out and had a huge crush on him, so he didn't go talk to anyone and went back to the office and said, Edward Albert. And that is how he got a cast in this film.
Wow.
Grace
did the same apply to Erin Moran?
No, she was the biggest star of the film.
Yeah, I know. She got
coming off of Happy Days.
This really places the movie in its time when she's the star named in the trailer.
She is her and Edward Albert are really kind of the biggest names, but Erin Moran is really the biggest name of everybody at this point in time. Even
Sunday, Monday, Happy Days. It's like Erin Moran from Happy Days, right?
I think you mean Joni Loves Chachi, but I know what you're saying. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
You're right. I'm sorry. my bad.
The preferred show for everyone.
I feel like America didn't give Joni Loves Chachi enough of a chance.
Man. I mean, what? Finally, somebody said it. It's fun. The last episode,
they eloped, and we never got to see how that turned out.
Never knew what happened, other than they eloped. So we can only assume happily ever after. She was the biggest star, though, over actors like Ray Walston from My Favorite Martian, who would go on to play Mr. Hand and Fast Times at Ridgemont High like a year later. Yeah. Sid Haig, who's a veteran of New World and Corman movies and Jack Hill movies. Mm-hmm. This is Robert Englund before Freddy, and even V, the mm-hmm. miniseries. So, and he got this as an offer. He was offered this part. He didn't have to audition. Not sure if it was his appearance in Toby Hooper's Eaten Alive, which was released by New World. If that was an influence at all in the casting, I'm not sure. Zalman King is at the end of his acting career and right before a few years away from 9 1/2 Weeks, which he co-wrote with his wife. And then he would go on to direct Wild Orchid and Red Shoe Diaries and tons of erotic thrillers.
Right.
And also Grace Zabriskie from Twin Peaks. Like we just had such a stat cast. It's unbelievable. And
to tie Seinfeld back in it. She's George Cassandra's mother-in-law.
All right.
In the back of a horse carriage while the horse was having some gastrointestinal issues because of the beefarino.
We cannot escape Seinfeld in space. We really can't.
No, in my head canon, she's the same character. That was Hesperus that she was talking about. It was the carriage
ride. Of course, another star of this movie is the production design run by James Cameron. As former Corman assistant turned head of production, Marianne Fisher told Fantastic Films, she said, "This time around, we show a distinct improvement over Battle Beyond the Stars," she's saying, "in every aspect of the production, as we now know every inch of the studio and all its special capabilities. We were also lucky to have some of the special effects team from Battle back with us, including Bob and Dennis Skotak, Jim Cameron, and Brian Chin." So, James Cameron, huge part of this movie, we'll get into, but production design is where he starts. He also takes on other duties as the production goes on. But before we get there, here's where you can watch Galaxy of Terror. Tarek, you watched it on YouTube. It is also, as of the time of this recording, it is on Prime. Shout TV, Philo! Hey!
Philo!
Philo's back!
Phil! Oh. I've got a streaming service. It's called Philo!
I wonder if Philo knows J-Li.
Probably.
I don't know.
Probably.
Seems like they might know each other.
I think they had a falling out.
Oh.
To be honest. Yeah.
That makes sense.
They don't talk anymore.
Yeah.
Jay lies. Jay lies.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. That's what Philo says. Philo told me.
Mm-hmm. That's what I heard from Philo. Mm-hmm.
And Philo's a gossip. Loves the tea.
Philo filled me in. He let me know. Jay lies.
This movie is also on Shudder and Tubi.
Tubi.
Among other streaming services, also it is on disc. You can get this disc as well on 4K and Blu-ray if you'd like from Shout. But now let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what?
Please.
Mark, what is Galaxy of Terror about?
Let me see if I can boil this down.
Boil it.
A team is sent on a rescue mission to find out what happened to the crew of a spacecraft that years before mysteriously disappeared. That crashed on a planet. When they arrive at the ship, they find everyone is dead, but something evil is lurking in the gravity drive. I mean, on the tower in the planet. There's a tower on the planet. That's what I mean. Anyway, each crew member is forced to confront their hallucinations, their deepest fears, while Dr. Weir, Kor, tells them everything's fine, nothing to worry about. And soon, they realize they're not on a rescue mission. They're trapped in a nightmare. Did I describe Galaxy of Terror or Event Horizon? You be the judge.
Very close. It's very, very close.
I prefer Event Horizon. 1,000 times. I prefer that film. Yeah. That film kind of just laid out what it was about. Very simply, this film, as I said earlier before we got on, I was constantly surprised. I think I misspoke. I was really confused. The top, I was like, what is happening?
Mm-hmm.
The opening, like the, you know, you get the synth score that is very aggressive. Less cocaine, please. but, you know, something is happening on this spaceship. That much is clear. What exactly is happening? I'm not sure. Is it the Force? Is Vader about to come through? Is it an alien monster? And then I'm watching a chess match, a digital chess match between a witch and a... this is where I don't even have the language.
Words cannot contain this movie. It truly contains multitudes.
In so many multitudes. It's a multiverse.
In its own, in one universe.
Yeah.
Erica, what is Galaxy of Terror about?
Oh, Galaxy of Terror. You know, sometimes you take a job. It's not your passion. You just need some work. We all have bills to pay, even in space. So Galaxy of Terror follows a gang of people who just needed one more job. One quick and easy rescue mish. And then I can get my space boat, my space motorcycle, my space Xbox, my space, you name it. But guess what? Sometimes, even the seemingly easiest of jobs aren't what they seem. Audio knowing wink.
Yeah. Guys, I will boil it down even more. What's this movie about? It's just a game.
Oh.
It's just a game, guys. It's a game. It's a child's game. That's what this movie is.
Got it.
I think I know what this movie is. It just hit me. I'm sorry if I'm going again. It's a team building exercise video.
See? Yep.
There it is.
Yeah.
This
is for employees.
There's the quote.
And corporate managers to show their employees, like, guys, all right. Let's use our imaginations. Mm-hmm. Put on our imagination matrix hats, all right?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
How do we work together in hostile situations? Let me show you a video of how things can go wrong. Hit play.
That's right.
I thought you were going to say it was like a team building weekend where if you are too scared to do the trust fall, you actually die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you face your fears, or you don't go back to the office, or you don't go home. You're not leaving the camp.
Yeah.
You need to embrace that fear for sure.
Yeah.
Here's the Letterboxd synopsis. Here's what Letterboxd says.
I can't wait for this. Bring it.
As a lone spaceship proceeds on its long voyage across space. What? No. Wait. Is this another movie? What's been happening?
That's like a 2-second space ride.
That's not it at all. In fact, we get to the action very fast. We are not on a long voyage. Anyway, the crew are surprised to encounter a strange pyramid form. Yes, but mm-hmm. no, that's not how this... Mm-hmm. They're not just going through mm-hmm. we're traveling through space. Oh, there's a pyramid. That was weird. Where did that come from? That's not how this goes. Anyway, surprise turns to horror as one by one, they discover that their darkest nightmares are all starting to become real. I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Would have been nice if we knew what their darkest nightmares were before yeah. that happened. Yeah. I mean, just clue us in yep. a little bit.
Yep.
But sure.
Yeah, because a lot of them seem to have the same nightmare. Or variations of the theme. Same
fear.
Yeah. Like, ooh, yeah. is it a slimy thing? Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Robert Englund's fear is himself. Like, yeah. I just yeah. don't want to, I do not want to deal with myself.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to have to read a book. I thought that's what he was going to be forced to do.
I thought Sig Haig's fear was the funniest because they go into that on the rescue mission going into the other ship. They see a dead body hanging. Sig Haig's first instinct is to throw crystal shuriken, right? A throwing star.
Yeah.
Made mm-hmm. of crystal. He literally says,
I live and I die by the crystals.
And grand opening, grand closing, buddy. Like, mm-hmm. that's it. Everybody.
Yeah.
Those crystals sold out.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. This is just the one set.
just the one set.
He didn't get multiple sets.
No.
Next time you get your crystals, buy in bulk.
That's why I was so mad when they broke. He was like, these were my granny's crystals. You stupid, mean old pyramid.
My granny Folger's crystals.
But it's, if we're being honest, if all of us, let's say everyone around us had to face their deepest fears. Or I mean, crystals. I'm not trying to shit on your point here, Tarek, but I'm just saying, like, if I was around some friends, we all had to face our fears, there would be enough similarities, or at least with some of my friends, I'd be like, you too? Oh, that freaks your shit out too? Uh-huh. Wow, yeah. We are more alike than I thought. I think it'd be a learning moment right before we died. It'd be a learning moment of like, oh, we should have been better friends.
Well, this is why it's a great corporate training video, right? Like, it's a great team building exercise. Like, see, John, Mike's also afraid of worms. So is Tara. You're not alone.
Just look at the dialogue that's already creating. Look at it. Like, we're just mm-hmm. creating so much dialogue. It's already working as a great training exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hey, last guys. Line of the... I don't want to interrupt, but it's Janet from HR here. Sorry. Hi. I was just zipping through Galaxy of Terror, and there's a couple scenes in there that we're not going to be able to use in the training video. Oh, Ryan, yes. I think you know which ones they are, but in case you need a quick refresher, one of them involves a giant bug. And a woman without any clothes. So we're going to need to cut that one from the training video. Otherwise, great idea. Keep them coming, Ryan. And Ryan, those OP center tube tops that you wanted are on God. Back oh, order. Terrific. I'm so sorry. Oh, it's okay. a very back popular order. Item. Well,
yeah,
very. No, it's understood. The summer. I hope you can understand. Yeah. They're very popular.
I was
so.
Very late to sign up to that list, yeah. so that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But okay, thanks. Sorry, Jen. Don't want to interrupt. You, love what you're doing here. It's cute. It's cute. Keep it up. Good for you, Ryan. Good for you.
Thank you, Janet. The last line of this synopsis is, the pyramid has to be behind it all somehow, but how can they save themselves from its influence?
Okay.
The pyramid isn't behind it, just spoiler, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if we really want to dig even deeper into what this movie is about, let's look at the 1981 press book from New World Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, Ryan. It's gorgeous Ryan. Looking. It looks brand new. There's not even, like, a crease on it. Somebody...
Yeah.
That tells me there's somebody out there, you guys, that loves New World more than us.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we go through, we got Corman here. We've got all the movies that they're working on, including.
Ryan, the creases. Don't fold that.
Yeah, Ryan, why are you bending it with such vigor? Calm down. Should you have gloves on? You don't even have gloves on. Jesus, Ryan.
This is never going to get rated at this point.
Planet of Horrors. And here's what it says. A spellbinding science fiction terror tale in the alien tradition. Planet of Horrors begins when a hardy band of space.
Hardy band.
Are you in?
I'm in.
Are you in?
A Hardy band.
A Hardy band of space adventurers find themselves marooned on a weird, uncharted world at the edge of the known galaxy.
They're there on purpose, and I'm pretty sure it's a job, but sure.
I wouldn't describe any of the space crew as Hardy. Anyone. There's no one there who's Hardy. There's no... Yeah. Oh, I think a Hardy like...
Maybe Sid Haig, but
that's maybe,
it.
But
maybe,
yeah,
he's the closest.
He's the closest to Hardy. Yeah.
Zalman King is the furthest thing from Hardy.
Yeah,
right.
Hey guys, I'm in charge. Okay, I'm in charge this time. Just listen to me, because I'm in charge. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, also, wake up. Have a cup of coffee. Are you all right?
Nobody here is questioning your authority.
Yeah, like, not a single person.
Yeah. No one had any
issues.
We're
all happy for you.
Yeah.
We're happy for you.
Yeah. Slowly, one by one, members of the Star Task Force.
What? Who are they? What did they? Was that in the original cut?
Task Force. I don't... What is that?
Terrifying
deaths at the hand of Bizarre's man-killing flora and fauna. That'll get them in. That'll put butts in seats. The only escape route seems clear. Retreat back to the safety of outer space. They only talk about it, as we'll get into. They talk about it all the time. They never do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a mysterious force field emanating from an enigmatic pyramid, I guess, we no idea where it's coming from, on the planet's surface, bars their ship from leaving the atmosphere. Their only hope for survival must somehow lie within the sealed walls of the alien structure, but will any of the team live long enough to find a way inside?
Wait, they missed multiple times, right? Way inside multiple times. They go in, they leave, they go, whew! Don't want to go in there again. Ah, let's go back.
Yeah.
But let's go back. That's the structure of the movie. Mm-hmm. That's the structure.
Yeah.
They were here. Well, we got to go find those people. Oof, we lost a guy. Ah, I don't want to go back out there. Yeah, but we should. Okay, we're back.
Okay. We got to talk about the every time someone dies, it didn't register to me that the crew knew that the person died. Like, the way the dialogue and the way the performances are structured, they leave someone behind, and then the next scene they're all kind of gathered, and it's just like, whoof, man.
Yeah. I mean,
not even a poor Johnny.
Do you guys remember Koss? Guys,
yeah, Koss.
You remember Koss? You remember Koss? Because guess who doesn't? The crew.
Yeah.
The crew. At all.
Yep.
And I'll be honest, I wanted more of Space Down Knots. I wanted to see him be scared. I wanted a whole movie of him just scared of wires.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, please tell me that's his fear. He's scared of wires. Ooh, buttons. Whoa.
I know. We lose him so fast. Like, the minute they touch down on LV-427, pretty much. Or, sorry, Morganthus. I apologize.
Or the Event Horizon. Either way.
Either way. You know what I'm saying. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They do crash land on the planet because they were going too fast. They don't even mention the fact that they're in a force, that they got sucked into something that was drawing them to the planet till like midway through the film.
They also have a ship with no yoke, no throttle, no rudder, no brakes.
No.
The ship is entirely flown by just moving switches up and down. Mm-hmm. Switches up and down. Switches up and down.
Switches.
Not exactly. It's also run on vibes.
Vibes is a big part of the ship.
Run on vibes and switches. And my favorite aspect of the ship.
Gotta rub it.
Yeah.
Your switches and your monitors aren't close at all.
No.
So you're hitting switches, but you gotta look and walk over there to see where you're going.
And you gotta walk
back and hit that switch again. Mm-hmm.
And they don't need headphones to talk to each other. They have people on another part of the ship that are also flicking switches that have no way of communicating to the commander and the captain, which makes me think those are like fidget spinner switches where they're just like, I'm nervous. Mm-hmm. I'll flick switches just to keep me busy.
Exactly. And if your seatbelt doesn't work. Team building exercise number two. Jump in between the legs of your female co-pilot.
Yep.
She let her hold on to you.
Yep.
She's got to straddle you. That's the only way to keep it safe.
She's got you.
She's got you.
Hey, never never skip leg day. All right?
Never skip leg day.
Space Don Knotts is extremely freaked out, and he just needed to be held. That's all he needed.
Zoinks.
Poor guy.
Actually, to skip to things we love, but man, the fact that the cockpit of that ship also has a balcony. How big is this cockpit? It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
It's massive.
Why do you need that? I don't know, but I love it. I don't know. You never
cock
see that.
Anyway, that's what we call it.
They do crash and land on this planet, and of course what they do is they instantly head out. If you have watched it closely enough, you'll hear somebody ADR off of camera talk about how, I guess the air is okay for you to breathe, otherwise you're just going to have to guess. If you missed that because it's not said by anyone on camera, then he might be like, whoa, I guess it's okay outside.
Yeah,
but they do go outside, and I guess they're looking for survivors, but they got something that's going to help.
Aluma, are you sensing anything?
Absolutely nothing.
If there's anything to be found, Cameron, I'll find it myself.
Balon, I'm size sensitive. The subtle energies do exist. They even pay me to sense them, all right?
Guys, she's size sensitive. And if only that ever paid off.
I know.
But this is really what I mean when I say this is a team-building exercise. People come in all shapes and sizes. Is it polite to always comment on those shapes and sizes? No. So be size sensitive.
Very true. So true.
Great point.
I also think that it's great that even in the future, when we have the ability to fold time and space, fly to any planet we want, you still need a medium.
You got it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How much does that pay? And how do you get a raise?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How does that meeting go?
Seems like that's also a touchy subject. Hey, guys, I get paid for this. That's not the first time. You said, look, I'm paid to do this. Okay, guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a professional. Yeah. I'm a professional feeler, guys. I feel stuff for money.
Seriously.
Yeah. This is what I do, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of get why Balon is so pissed, because he's dealing with this girl's like, I mean, what if she gets paid more than Balon? What is her rate? Like, how does she, like, and everyone's like, she's just basically, I guess, can feel presences, and she gets paid double what I make. This doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, and it doesn't really help. You can feel a presence. It doesn't really help anybody.
No.
What are you feeling right now? I'm feeling they're dead.
Yeah.
That's why they pay her the big bucks. That's
Yeah.
They even pay me to sense them, all right?
Back on the ship, Balon is upset. He's the asshole second in command, and he suggested they make repairs to the ship. But the commander, he has a different idea.
The fact of the matter is, we don't know any more now than when we started, except that the Remus wasn't safe, either were we. We're not even doing the repairs we need.
Balon, this is a rescue mission specifically ordered by the Master. We are required to do everything within our means to locate and assist survivors.
There are no survivors.
We know of 5 certain deaths, so there are still 4 unaccounted for. Look at this. Something along 419 that's so below the instruments we can't even get a reading on it.
Whoever sucked us into this slag, he pulled from a single point.
A point I'm afraid we have no option but to investigate.
Why?
Why?
but also why? Why do we need to?
Mm-hmm.
There are other options, I'm sure.
We're scanning this whole planet. We just can't get anything right there. Mm-hmm. We better go look. Somebody's dead. No one remembers Kaz, guys. Kaz is dead. Do you guys recall that Kaz died?
Yeah.
No.
I wish one of these movies, anytime there is a missing space crew, it's called The Lost, man. Like, just...
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's the name.
Yeah, well...
Notify the families?
Yeah.
Yeah, we notified the families. Then we did everything we could do. Whatever they went out to find, found them first. Yeah. And mission accomplished. Yeah. We now know it's not safe to go wherever yep. they went. We go in the opposite direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But I guess they can't really... in this instance, they can't really argue because the commander actually goes with them.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you're like, well, I mean, I guess you're coming too. Whereas before you were like on the ship doing nothing, but now you're actually coming with us. So, meh.
He comes with them, but he's immediately an anchor where he's like, oh, fuck. Yeah. I am too fucking old to be climbing this tower.
And look, I feel that. I feel every bit of
it. I felt
that,
every
no
bit
doubt.
Of it. I was like, you should not have come. You shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And someone should have said, I'm going to take Commander back to the ship because he's
so this, again, why this is such a great like corporate team building video. He made two mistakes. Mm-hmm. One, like you pointed out, he went. And his knees were not for it, right? His knees were not for the
mission.
It was the first thing he was like, ah! I'm old, right?
Like, yeah.
Immediately.
And then he immediately after is like, I'm too old, makes a second big no-no, especially for anyone who's a manager in the managerial class. He hits on his young female coworker.
Oh, hard.
Yep.
Hard.
Yep. Hard.
Ah, I'm old. But I ain't that old. Come on, buddy.
If you catch my drift,
yeah.
Do you catch it? Do you get what I'm laying?
He's like,
you catching what I'm laying down here?
I'll be the first to go down this hole if I can go down. You know what I mean? Is that subtle enough for you? This is where someone would interrupt the video and say, this is not subtle at all.
This is not subtle at all. Commander was not being subtle. And actually, that's not appropriate in the workplace.
Also, whoever designed that, the shape of the holes and doorways, suspect. There's a lot of suspect. That hole, it's a little...
Yeah. A little butthole-y. It's a little butthole-y.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little butthole-y. Too much.
I can honestly say I have never come across in any sort of hiking or walking around adventuring a giant hole that I was like, welp, let me get down there.
Mm-hmm.
Never, not one single time. Mm-hmm. Never once.
Well, it's a good time, especially if you're a manager, to admit your fears and don't let your hubris, you know, like... Don't let your eyes be bigger than your stomach, right? My dad used to say that to me all the time. Don't let your hubris or your body cash checks. What is it? Don't let your something cash checks your body can't cash or something like that?
Yep, right.
That statement? Something. Something like that. Y'all know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
His body couldn't cash a check.
No.
One. Two, he had clearly had a fear of going into... like dark butthole. Sorry. Literally had a fear.
A deep fear.
A deep fear. Because that's where he meets his demise. Mm-hmm. And he should have just admitted to the team. Should have been like, I'm the captain. Let me go down this suspicious looking scary hole.
And he pays for it with his life. Mm-hmm. But he pays for it with all these little worms kind of coming and eating them, and, and I had to record this.
Yes.
This is what these worms.
Yes.
This is what this sounds like.
Yes.
It's
thank you, Ryan.
It's like the sound from a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yes. Yes.
And was there like a cat at the end that was like meow? Like
yeah.
There he is! There's
there's a cat at the end. Yeah. There's a cat at the end. What is happening in that? What sort of noise is that? The rest of the crew don't mourn him, but I mean, they don't mourn anyone. I mean, Kaz? Yeah. Guys, do you remember Kaz? No one. They don't mourn him.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. The pyramid, though, goes wrong for all of them pretty quickly. And they're not even inside. They're just climbing on the outside. First, we have Sid Haig and his beloved crystals, as we're talking about, which is a sequence that James Cameron came up with because he kind of took over doing second unit.
Yeah.
And he does second unit, and he shoots this sequence. So he comes up with a sequence where the crystal penetrates his skin and starts up, which on the director's or the commentary on the disc, they talk about, because one of the guys is special effect guys, that they actually put on his skin, what they used on the skin is a dental dam. Mm. And they use a dental dam, and then they slide the crystal up, and then they have a monofilament that they pull the crystal, and they've just
It looks pretty good, actually.
It looks pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, it's very surprising. Like, you're seeing schlock, and then all of a sudden, like, wait a minute, that's actually really interesting and cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was amazing that that's what I was like, that's what you used? Because that looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I have a theory that, because I saw a video of Cameron talking about, like, yeah, we were second unit, and we basically shot a third of the film. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure those are all the more interesting, elevated parts. But I also think this film was why he directed Aliens. I think this was his...
It's certainly an influence.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure.
Like, it's because clearly whoever created Galaxy of Terror had seen Alien and were very influenced by the space jockey and all the esoteric, like, unexplained weird stuff. And we're like, let's just make that a whole movie.
Yeah, 100% they were influenced by Alien, and that's why I think that's why they copped to it in the, like, press book. In another episode that we did on this podcast, we talked about Alien because that script, the initial script, not the script they eventually shot, but the initial script was brought to Corman to make.
Wow.
And so Corman had an opportunity to make the original Alien. And at that point in time, it was going to be, I think, Ronald Shusett and Dan O'Bannon, and Dan O'Bannon was going to direct. So it's not quite exactly the same movie, but ever since then, of course, then in 1979 it comes out, and it's a movie that they all watch when they're shooting Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yeah.
So it's this big influence to everybody. And Corman goes on to remake or make his versions of Alien, this maybe being the first. He makes so many, way even past New World and into Concord New Horizons. This movie from here eventually gives us Forbidden World, which is yet another kind of Alien ripoff. And he just rips off Alien forever when he could have had Alien in New World Pictures. He could have had the original movie. I mean, it wouldn't have been the movie we all know, but he could have had the original film. But the whole sequence then with this crystals, and he cuts it. Does he punch his arm off?
He punches his arm off.
How on earth?
Yeah. When we were watching it together, Ryan and I, Ryan asked me that. And I was like, we even rewatched it. And I was like, I feel like he punched it off, but it's such a clean cut. I was a punch. Imagine he's making a salad. He's just like, pow, 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 chopping those carrots. Well,
you live and die by the crystals. You say a statement like that, you got to really mean it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So yeah.
Corporate, rule number 5. Say what you mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Say what you mean, right? Because that's how your other coworkers can trust you, how management can trust you, right? So if you are in a tense situation and you live and die by the crystals, and one of those crystals gets in your skin and it's making its way up to your brain, you gotta punch your arm out, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta live by your word.
Yeah. Yeah.
He punches that arm off. It gets covered in maggots. Now, this sequence where the maggots, like, move along on the arm,
yucky,
of course, is an infamous moment that leads to another infamous moment. But before we get there, this infamous moment here is shot, of course, by James Cameron, as we mentioned. Took over second unit. I believe that they were running behind. So Cameron approaches Corman in the hallway and says, let me do second unit. And he goes, all right. Cameron makes this effect by making the maggots move, and how he does it is that he covered the arm in mealworms, which is the kind of what the crew went out and got. He covers the worms in methylcellulose,
And then he used a zip cord that he then would like plug into a junction box and it would just send electricity and make him move. So Cameron talks about this in Chris Nashawaty's book, Crab Monsters, Teenage Cavemen, and Candy Stripe Nurses. And this is how he talks about the maggot sequence. I set up the camera and I pointed it down to the arm. And meanwhile, unbeknownst to me, two guys have wandered up behind me. One of them I know, who is a sleazeball producer named Jeff Scheckman, who we talked to on this podcast. So, Jeff, we're sorry. This is James Cameron's words, not our words. You're a great guy as far as we're concerned. And the other one is another sleazeball producer named Ovidio Asinitis, who was going to produce Piranha 2. So these guys are watching me, and what they see is me pointing a camera at an arm. And then I say action, which is the cue for the guy to plug the zip cord in, and all the worms come to life. And then I say cut, and the guy unplugs the zip cord, but you don't see him because he's behind the set wall. So what these two producers are seeing is that I say action, and all of these worms start squirming around, and I say cut, and they stop. They can't figure it out. And that's how I got to direct Piranha 2, The Spawning.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah.
Of course, that one maggot escapes and somehow grows to a giant size.
The maggot growing sound is also very, it's like $6 million man, like, like very.
This worm becomes a problem for Demea, and it, well, how should we say it? Attacks her?
Yeah.
So we're here at corporate lesson number 6. Inappropriate touching.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So management can make inappropriate statements and advances. It's a no-no. Mm-hmm. Touching is a fireable offense.
Yeah.
And can get you in serious legal trouble. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to do it. And so the best way we feel we can portray this is with a giant maggot.
Yep. It's a very sensitive point to make. So in order to do it, we have to make the biggest maggot we could possibly make.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
The intro card to that section of the video is don't be a big maggot.
Be a big maggot.
Mm-hmm. Here's how Corman sensitively wraps up this worm scene to Knight's Newswire. He said, quote, "We have this wild-looking girl who gets raped by the monster." Way to just jump right into it there, Rodney.
Okay, get right to it.
I told the director, Bruce Clark, that we should film an X-rated scene and then cut it back to an R. Well, Bruce shot the wildest scene I have ever seen. We cut a little bit of it out, but it was still an X. One more time, we cut it and submitted it, and the board said no, but gave us suggestions on what to do. You see, this monster has some attributes that are somewhat phallic.
Oh, no.
Roger.
I never saw any maggot dong in this movie.
Yeah.
I am blown away by that statement.
Yeah. The surprises are still coming, Tarek. Still coming, even after the movie.
I read up on this. Like, I watched it, and I was like, I have to read up on it. And I read about the infamous, like, because the version I watched on YouTube, the worm scene was drastically cut. Like, mm-hmm. I see the attack, and then, so mm-hmm. I don't feel like I missed anything. But then I read up on the infamous worm scene. I even went to Reddit and saw some interesting comments of, and I don't know if this is fake or not, that Corman, she dies through orgasm?
Yep. Yes.
So that's real. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Corporate lesson number 12.
Oh boy.
All the while Commander is stuck in a butthole going, damn it.
And all I can hear is meow, 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 meow. That sounds like Scooby Doo eating a slice of pie. Like, it's terrible.
It is. I had to, like,
clip that. It was the most. It's the most amazing sound. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So funny.
Sound effects are just perfect.
Back on the ship, things aren't going well as the captain loses it, thinking they're under attack, and she learns a valuable, though fatal, lesson about firing a weapon in an airlock. You only make that mistake once, I'm afraid. But,
It looked like she might have been okay, though.
Yeah.
When she steps out, she just looks a little surprised, but she's also skinless.
A little skin grafting, and,
you know,
put some gauze on her. She'll be character. Fine.
I was pulling for this character.
Yeah.
Because, survive Espers.
The lone survivor. Like yeah.
Macho Grande. Survive Macho Grande. she's playing a video game. What else are you going to do when your crew...
They're all out. They're all out.
Kaz, we don't even worry about Kaz.
He's a goner. Yeah.
We're not worried about Kaz.
Yeah.
Kaz is rotting somewhere.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about Commander in hours.
Yeah, who cares?
I'm into this video game. That apparently isn't a video game. That's not. Yeah. There's nothing on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And she runs out. She gets a big gun. I'm like, ooh, she's about to kick some ass.
Mm-hmm.
And that ass is her own. And I was not expecting it. And I, again, was surprised.
Yeah.
Yep. It's surprising. That's surprising. You didn't see that coming. I didn't see it coming either.
No.
Nope.
Of course, when they're on the ship, another person starts to go, you know what? We should probably get out of here.
Like snipers, picking us off one by one.
The way they're appearing and disappearing, they could be moving through dimensions. There's no sign of dimension on this tour.
It's obvious there are no survivors from the Remus. Let's fix the ship and go home.
Forget the field that pulled us down here. What makes you think we can lift out of it?
I won't go back into that thing.
I don't run out on fights. We gotta find the source of the field.
Balon, will you quit? You're driving me crazy.
When you do go back, I'd like to join you.
No place for a cook.
Can you handle a weapon, Cor? I can take care of myself.
Now, we mentioned this film before a couple of times, Event Horizon. One of my favorite moments in that, because I saw it in the movie theater, Lawrence Fishburne sees the video of the ship that they've come to rescue, and they replay the tape. And then he turns to the crew, and he says, we're out of here. The audience went bananas. Mm-hmm. They were like, yes, mm-hmm. get out.
Yeah.
Leave immediately.
Yeah.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Yeah.
Corporate lesson number 28. Think out of the box. You got to get things right.
Think out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Get out of the box.
Yeah.
Get out,
you have of, get the out of the box.
That's, the, that's what comes up on the screen.
Yep.
Get out of the box.
Get out of there.
Get out of the box.
Get out of get out of your box.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was not what the commander was thinking, but I get what you're saying.
The commander was thinking...
Hey, I'm old, but I ain't that old, you know?
Oh my god. It was
and
so
then
gross.
Immediately falls down the hill. Making old man noises.
Oh man. So, the best part of that clip is Aaron Moran going, I'm not going back in there. Guess what? In 2 minutes, you will.
Yeah.
And not only will you go back up, which we don't even bother with, but you go in.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. go inside.
Yeah.
And I believe the interior inside the pyramid, a lot of that is, I think, made by the Skotak brothers, because they built it not only as a set, but they also built it as miniature. And a lot of the influence there was Fantastic Planet, also released by New World Pictures, one of Erica's favorites.
Love that one.
Check our episode out on that one. Mm-hmm. So that was some of the influence of the interior, which looks, it does look incredible. Probably one of my favorite scenes, really, not to skip ahead, but that, because that image of that interior when they walk in just, I always, when I think of this movie, I think of that image.
It's pretty cool.
It's, yeah, it looks amazing. Mm-hmm. Of course, Balin doesn't last long. He gets attacked and he falls to his death, which in the commentary they talk about, because they built it in miniature, when he falls, they shoot it at like a different frame rate, but essentially they throw a G.I. Joe down. I was like, oh, we're grabbing dental dams, we're grabbing G.I. Joes, we're just, you know what,
gotta,
we're making
what
a movie
do
here, guys, we're doing mm-hmm. whatever we can, we're
love
doing
it
whatever we can.
Apparently, I guess his fear was losing a wrestling match to the devil.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
brings us to corporate lesson number 46.
Yeah.
Keep your religion out of the office.
Thank you. That should be an earlier lesson, arguably.
It should be. But we're surprised it came this late ourselves.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. That's true. The surprises never stop.
Just keep coming.
By the way, that giant head, too, that attacks him, that's a giant head that apparently Corman got. He had around. Somebody had given him that at some point, and he'd never done anything with it. So he just threw that. They built a body around it, but the head was Corman's from somewhere, from who knows where.
That was Julie just looking at his room full of weird shit and being like, when are you going to clear this out? When are you going? I'm sorry. Right. This is supposed to be a guest room, and we have guests coming. You got to clear all this shit out. Mm-hmm. Either you do something with this or I'm throwing it away.
Mm. All right, I'll get the head out. I'll get the head out, but everything else, that's the compromise. All right? The head leaves, but everything else stays.
Baby steps. Take one step at a time.
So Balin falls to his death. Robert Englund fights himself. And Aaron Moran, in a sequence that I absolutely... favorite scene, loved. Oof. A sequence that they actually shoot after principal photography. She's initially supposed to just be consumed in white or something, like, but instead they bring her back, and you can tell because her hair is wildly different than it is in the, and all of a sudden her head gets blown up. They blow up her head.
Yeah.
They take Joni, they get her back, and they blow her head off.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do we think she was afraid of?
That she would get found out that she doesn't have any of this size sensitivity.
Ooh. Yeah.
That is
that
a
she
ruse.
Was a fake. That she was
that
a fake.
That is a ruse. That she just started out as a dare, mm-hmm. and then it just once you start lying, it's just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do
I thought
do?
Maybe because it was the head explosion, she was like, I don't want anybody to know this isn't my natural hair color. Now they'll never know.
Which always brings us to corporate lesson number 76. Be yourself.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Be yourself always. You know, don't lie in a resume.
Mm-hmm.
Just be yourself, because if you get in a tight spot, which she did, you might not be able to get out of it because you didn't get out of your box. Refer back to 46.
Yep.
You didn't get out of your
box. Yeah.
Yeah.
All true.
It's a touching moment when Cabron does come across her corpse, because he sees it and then he has this look of like he doesn't even know what it is, and he doesn't make any sort of emotional response like you would when your girlfriend's head has been exploded. But instead he looks at it like he would look at, I don't know, like the 80th painting you've seen in a day at a museum, where you're like, I'm sure that's great art. I'm a little worn down at this point.
Yep, that's what all battle scenes look like. That's all battlefields.
I think this is a perfect moment to talk about his performance throughout this entire film, because it is, and I know this actor passed, and I know he's been good in other stuff, so RIP, but in this movie, it's pretty one note. It's like, he is just like, I am hitting this chill note, and that's it, guys. I'm going to be pretty chill. Isn't he asked, like, aren't you afraid? And he says, I'm too scared to be afraid. Or something like that. Like,
exactly.
He says it like, I'm just too scared to be afraid. I'm the captain. Yeah, man. Yeah, you are. Like,
he's that coworker. He's just like, sure, man. Yeah, cool.
Sure.
All right, whatever.
Sure. Yeah. He's like a duck skin, right? Just like everything's kind of rolling off, which is a good way to be.
Apparently, he was kind of like that in person. He was a very kind of bohemian-esque kind of guy, and he was very chill everybody. And
method.
I mean, his dad was also, both of his parents actually were performers, were famous performers. So,
Like circus performers.
If anybody's a famous performer, Mark's like, you were in the circus, right? That's where Mark thinks all famous performers come from. I mean, that's... How do they do that? How do they do what they do? I don't know. It's incredible.
Yeah.
You were in the circus? No, I wasn't.
Oh. Huh.
But were they ever in the circus? Look, I can't say they weren't in the circus. I don't...
Yeah, maybe they were.
And I can't say that they were. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. But he does basically gets then attacked by everybody. All the monsters and all the rest of the crew come after him.
But how does he beat the monsters? And gymnastics. Which brings us to our second to last lesson. Stay fit, guys.
Stay fit.
Stay fit of body.
Yeah.
Remember what happened to the commander. He was old and out of shape. He hadn't, you know, he wasn't ready for whatever task came his way. Because remember, the surprises don't stop coming. That's lesson number one. All right? Lesson number one, surprises don't stop coming. Lesson 99, stay fit.
Stay fit. Honestly, it should be number two.
It should be number two, but we were surprised it came this late. But stay fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because honestly, the surprises keep coming, so staying fit is really important. It shouldn't be that far down the road.
It shouldn't be.
It should be way up. It should
surprises
be
surprises keep
list,
coming. But... Keep religion out of work. But
we will revise this.
We'll eventually get to stay fit.
We will stay fit. He is flipping all over these monsters. Yeah. There are more flips than necessary.
Yeah. For sure.
For sure. He beats everybody pretty quickly, and then he comes across the master.
I will find a way to kill you for what you've done.
Perhaps you will, but enough, Gebrin. Why let your emotions rule now, after showing such admirable control of your fear? You've already won the game. A children's game, Gebrin. This pyramid is an ancient toy. A brilliant initiatory toy for the children of a vanished race to see their deepest fears and learn to control them.
Imagine going through all of that, everything. Your whole crew gets killed. You're the only one standing. And then he was like, you're playing a kid's game.
Yeah.
And you can see all that on his face as he just blankly stares at the master like, Remember, he's
super chill. So he's like, cool. Mm. All right.
Yeah.
You know what? Tarek, I don't want to take it, but lesson number 100.
It's you. It's on you. It's all you.
Stay cool, y'all.
Stay cool. Mm-hmm. Is it the two hands? I know, like, listeners, you can't see it, but you just put two hands
stay
out.
Cool.
Yeah. Kind of a chin level.
Stay cool.
Yeah.
Stay cool.
Stay cool.
Stay cool.
Stay cool.
Stay cool. Because the surprises keep coming. But if you fit in mind, right? You're yourself. You know yourself. You're out of the box.
You're staying fit. You're being yourself.
You're being yourself. You're out of the box. Look, we're all going to have moments where we don't know what's going on. We're all going to have moments where we're constantly surprised and confused. But what do you do in those moments? You stay cool.
Stay cool.
So true. So true.
Yeah, and then you shoot your villain with your stomach chakra.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Uh-huh.
Because you stayed cool. It's only because you stayed cool.
You can access it because you stay cool.
Yeah.
You stay cool. Mm-hmm. Trust your gut. Hit him with your gut chakra.
Oh, yeah. That's 102.
101.
Trust your gut. Trust your gut. Number 101, trust your gut.
That's a 102. That's a 102. We're not there yet, but, you know, trust your gut, guys.
All of those should be way higher.
Yeah, arguably way higher.
We're gonna revise some of these. We're gonna look at the document after this workshop.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
We got some fire dancers coming up. There's going to be some juicy cake.
Right.
Guys, we got some people from the circus coming to perform.
Yeah. Yeah. But first, we got some, there's some layoffs. So if I could see
Mark. As soon as we do the layoffs, then we're going to bring in the comedy troupe Boom Chicago.
Yeah, you guys like improv? Improv is all about staying cool and being outside of the box.
Here we go.
Boy, I felt like, Tarek, I felt like we did some corporate shows where they had just done corporate layoffs and then we walked in.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, boy. It didn't feel like that.
We certainly have. It felt like we were in the Galaxy of Terror.
Mm-hmm. We really
otherwise
were.
Otherwise known as Trumpin or Utrecht.
Galaxy of Terror, Inc.
Oh, boy. Anyway, Erica, I think it is that time.
Ooh. It's time. Stay cool, everybody, and let's talk about things we loved and things we hated.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we loved and the things we hated about Galaxy of Terror. Mark, what did you love?
I fucking everything. Like, I mean, this movie, every scene is like, what? And I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it makes any sense. I'm not saying all the special effects work. Certainly the sound effects aren't working. I love a good synthesizer score. This is not the best that I've ever heard, or even a downright good one. It's subpar, as they might say.
Yes.
It's a 120-minute roller coaster ride. Is it the best roller coaster you'll ever go on? No. But at the end, you're going to go, that was a fun roller coaster. I don't remember half of it, and a lot of it didn't make sense. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure why it stopped halfway through, and we had to sit and wait for a while, and then it just kept going.
I was very confused. But then it kept going, and I got back into it, and I was like,
but you know, overall, I had a really good time. So
yeah,
I loved it.
All right,
yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Tarek, what did you love?
I agree with Mark. There's a lot to love, which is surprising, right? Like, that was one of the why I kept being, I stuck with
coming.
It, too.
They keep coming. They just keep coming.
I think a few of the things, that the first thing I love is that second unit. Mm-hmm. Cameron and that second unit. Mm-hmm. You guys, you took something and I think you elevated it to a place. I love the mythology, or the attempt at a mythology.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Like,
sure.
Starting with Master, who's, I love this visual image of, like, this kind of glowing orb over a head. Like, he's so powerful, you can't even comprehend his visage. Chess with the wizard, like, the witch. I was like, I don't know what's happening, but I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like the pyramid, and, like, okay, it doesn't feel cheap, right? I gotta say, I like Robert Englund in this. I like him, like, fighting himself and realizing, like, oh, this is some... No, okay. I'm not dying like Sig Egg. I don't live and die with crystals.
Right.
Yep.
I'm making it out of this. Like, those were some strong things. The mustache. The hero's mustache.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know what, guys? I'm not shaving enough.
Mm-hmm. It's not fully grown in. Like, I'm not shaving it off. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting rid of it. This is it. I grew it for this. Did you? You didn't grow it. You didn't.
Is it gonna fill in like a week? No.
This is as thick as it gets. This is it. If it gets any thicker, I'll trim it back to this. Erica, what did you love?
I love the sound effects. I know we already talked about it. I loved them.
Amazing. There's a cat.
So I laughed so
in the background.
Oh, so hard when he was getting eaten by those worms, because it just sounded so ridiculous, and it's supposed to be such a tense and sad and scary moment. It was just hilarious.
Amazing.
Oh, sound effects. So great.
Oh, sound effects. Yeah, the thing I loved the aesthetic of the film and the sets. I just loved how it's all done so cheaply, but it just looks so good. There's so much thought. Mm-hmm. And such an upgrade even from like Battle Beyond the Stars. I really think they make it for like 5 cents, but they really do so well with it. In that same book, James Cameron talked about how he built the sets. He said, quote, "I was trying to emulate this look of Silent Running. Doug Trumbull had a lot of vacuum-formed wall modules that he created on that film. I didn't have access to that kind of equipment. I had to whip something up. So what I did is I got a bunch of these styrofoam trays, McDonald's breakfast trays of all different sizes, and put them into configurations and hot glued them onto the walls and patterns. I just did it the super cheapo way. We bought them in bulk. I had one rule, which was never unplug your glue gun. And I used to scream at people about it because they took 20 minutes to heat up. And if you just left it on all night, then you could just quickly glue things together." I like that quote because it describes like the aesthetic and how you can make out of garbage, you could make something look really cool and interesting. And also showed like the other part of James Cameron that was already manifesting at that point, which is that he has this vision, and if you can't just do what he's saying, he's gonna fucking lose his mind. But all right, let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
It's really simple. In the final scene sequence, Cor is sitting on a glass table. That's just fucking dangerous, man. Don't sit on glass tables. Yes. The whole time I'm like, no matter what happens, you better hope that that table doesn't collapse on you while you're sitting on it, because that's going to suck. Yeah. I don't care if you're the master of the universe or whatever the hell you are. That is going to suck.
Yeah. He's not He-Man, Mark. He's not He-Man. Oh,
okay, but you get my point. So, yeah, I hated that he was sitting on that the whole time. Also, terrible lesson for children and adults, you know? Mm-hmm. If you're going to be the master of the universe or of the world or whatever, set a good example.
Yeah. Hmm? Also, there's no way that that table isn't filthy. Everyone's sitting on it, putting their hands on it. Oh, come on. For sure. You can't clean that table enough. It's never going to look clean. It's always going to look smudgy.
There's some artichoke dip on it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Keep it a clean office, guys. That doesn't even have to be in the rule book.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to
clean up after yourself. 103. Yeah. Clean up after yourself.
Mm-hmm. 103.
Yeah.
Please refer to it.
Yep.
Tarek, what did you hate?
I think I hated the, similarly, not because of the glass table, but the confrontation. So I either hate the runtime, or I think I wanted, it ended abruptly.
Okay. Do you want it to be longer? You wanted something a bit longer. Okay.
You know what? I wanted it to be longer. Just, you're at 120. Just do the full 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Do the full 90.
Yeah.
We're there. I want to know what the fate of our hero is, our protagonist. Like, he's now the master. Like, does he now have to play chess with the witch? Can the master revive his crew? Like, how powerful are you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or is he actually going to, like, the master, prior master of Vor, right? What's his name?
Cor, yeah.
Is he, like, what are the signs that he's going to be, like, Cor?
Yeah. Does he revert to that guy's kind of mindset? I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, transfer, or are you still just a super chill dude, but you're the master? Like,
what does the master do outside of play this game? Like, is that all the master does? I just wanted a little more.
Yeah, a little bit more.
It's a surprisingly Hal Hartley-esque ending for a New World picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah, it just kind of ends.
Yeah. And you're like, wait, what? That's it? Oh. All right.
Erica, something you hated.
I agree with you guys. I didn't hate much. It leaves a lot to the imagination, a lot of questions unanswered, but I don't think I hated that per se. I didn't overthink it, I guess, so I just stayed cool and didn't bother me. Stayed cool.
For me, I hated, we just mentioned it, Mark mentioned it, the score. This movie could have been vastly improved by the score. Barry Schrader, he wrote the score. He was a faculty member at CalArts School of Music. He recorded, actually, the score at CalArts.
Oh, wow.
On Mark, can you guess the instrument he used?
I couldn't.
It's a Buchla 200.
Oof.
Ooh.
Wow.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah. It's a modular synthesizer, right?
It is. I'm going to read something from New World Pictures Oral History Volume 2 where they interview him. He said that this was probably the only film that used the Buchla 200. This is probably the only film score that ever used it. To use the Buchla for film scoring, you really had to program it, quote unquote, so you could start a sequence of events and then record them. To make anything polyphonic, which means more than just one solo track, necessitated doing a lot of multi-tracking. At times in the score, there may be as many as 16 tracks.
Oof.
I had to use multiple tape recorders and keep mixing down in order to do that. He worked so hard on a score that...
That's wild.
Sometimes you're like, what? What is that?
Yeah.
What's that? What's going on? And like, is that like the ship? Oh, it's the score.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a lot for...
How can you hate that then, you jerks?
It's a lot of work. I want to give him the respect.
16 tracks
a lot of work.
Going at once. He was like, I hated it. How many tracks are you mixing right now? I'm sorry, guys. I need to stay cool because...
Stay cool.
Getting a little worked up. Getting a little worked
up. Well, because... Because and the reason why I will say I don't love it is because right after this, they make Forbidden World, which has a great electronic score that doesn't use the Buchla 200, but it still like has that same kind of aesthetic. But that's how you pull it off. So it gets done with Susan Justin, but
that's the difference between a Buchla 200 and a Prophet 5. Which is already polyphonic.
I say that all the time. If I had a nickel. Right, Ryan? All the time. I'm always like, you know, it's this Petrol 5 is no Buchla 200. You guys know, because you hear me say it all the time. You know.
I say it often.
All
let's time. Get... I've already mentioned two of mine. Let's get to our favorite scenes. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
It's definitely... it's really quick. The dry water slide. When Aaron Moran's character stops in the middle. Look, I remember stopping in the middle of water slides when I was a teenager thinking that would be really funny until someone comes barreling down and kicks the shit out of you from your lodged space in the water slide, which happens to her. And I felt that. I was like, yeah, I know exactly how that shit feels.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I, you know, it made me want to go on a water slide, which at my old age, I should not be going on water slides at all. I've graduated out of that. But, you know...
Mm-hmm.
That was my favorite scene.
The guy that's at the top of the slide and watching people go out the end in the pool is not paying attention.
No.
Yeah.
What happens in the tube stays in the tube.
That's right? A shirt. What happens in the tube stays in the tube. Just a water slide with like...
If only you could put sound effects on a shirt.
God, I know.
It happens in two days in the tube.
Tarek, your favorite scene?
I think it's Robert Englund figuring it out. Mm. Just because it was like, Robert Englund's going to figure it out. Okay.
Mm.
Okay,
yeah.
I kind of dig that. Mm-hmm. That whole sequence of him figuring it out, meeting up with Albert, them going in, confronting, going into the pyramid and like the steps.
A big matte painting too, which is done by Jim Cameron, which is done like, I believe, in charcoal, that step sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It reminded me of the, you ever see the movie The Keep?
Long time.
It reminded me like the visuals of like the pyramid and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. So I like Robert Englund figuring it out.
Yep. I like that as well. That was my favorite as well.
I didn't appreciate that those stairs were not ADA compliant, but I get what you're saying.
They were not.
Yeah.
Corporate lesson number 105.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Keep is another one of those that's like, makes no sense.
No.
And it's also like a great movie. It's like, you got some cool designs? Get some fog going.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You get enough fog going, it covers a lot of sins, guys. You know? And again, another great score. Tangerine Dream.
Tangerine Dream. They crushed that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't use the Buchla 200, but you know,
no one did. No one did after.
It was used for no the one score. Ever did.
Yeah, and everyone was like, "I'm good. I think I'll use something else." You did it though, dude. You did it. You did it.
You did you it did so it. That we didn't have to.
So, but I'm not doing it. I'm doing something else.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you how to work this. It's really complicated.
Don't worry about it.
I'm good.
We're good.
I'm good.
No worries.
You got to do multi-tracks. It takes like 16. I'm good, man. I'm going to use something else, I think, actually.
Is anybody buying the Buchlas? Anybody buying these Buchlas? No.
We got a lot of Buchla 200s in the bag. Is there, do you want me to bring them out on the floor?
No, you keep them back there.
We can't give away these Buchla 200s.
You guys.
Oh, wow. I had to just live Google what a Buchla 200 synth even looks like. It looks crazy.
Well, it's modular, so that you have to patch in everything and then dial it in sort of. I don't have it here. I have a modular synthesizer in the closet. So next time we talk about the Buchla, I'll bring it out.
Wild looking.
Next time, kids, we'll
wild
on film scores.
Yeah, Google it. Google it, listeners. If you don't know what it is, it is wild. Look, it is wild.
How do you spell Buchla? How do you spell
Buchla?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Final questions. Let's go to our final questions for Galaxy of Terror. Baylan wants to be second in command on this mission, but like, if you think about it, isn't he third?
Is it Baylan?
The captain, then you have the commander, then you have Baylan.
Yeah. So he's,
but the other two die, so that he automatically ladders up.
He's immediately in the opening scene. He's like, "I'm second command on this mission," so you know. But I'm like, but you have a captain, you have a commander. Like, you can't be second. Mm. Like,
yeah.
Who knew brewing within him was all that softcore porn inside of him? It was just waiting. It was bubbling, waiting to come out.
That's fair.
I mean, he does fight with the devil, guys. He is fighting with his sins.
Yeah.
And his sins win. And he is thrown overboard like a G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Right? He is a G.I. Joe as he's thrown over. Which G.I. Joe, I don't know. Of course, that was my question, but, you know, they didn't say. Sid Haig wanted to play his character as a mute, and that's the condition that when he got offered the role from Corman, he said, "I want to play him mute." Mm. And Corman was like, "Okay." So they did, but he was forced to say the one line, as Tarek has said.
"I live and I die by the crystals."
He said this in the Oral History of New World Pictures, Volume 1. He said this about the decision. He said, being old school, there's two rules about working with directors. Rule number one, the director is always right. Rule number two, if the director is ever wrong, refer to rule number one. So I said the line. What do we think about that? Agree or disagree?
I mean,
well, in my vast career of making, starring in movies, I would have to say.
Oh.
It's why he had the career he had, right? Like, he just had that mentality, and it was like, I have an idea, and I am certainly an artist, and I'll bring this to the table, but at the end of the day, okay. Like, I'll do what needs to be done. So I
do think there's a hard limit. If you are asked to punch off your arm, like, talk to your union rep. You're asked to punch off your arm.
Yeah, fair.
Take a pause.
Yeah,
it's a long way to go for a role. You know, it's a lot.
It's a long way.
That's
to
true.
Go.
That's true.
It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a real commitment.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into some research. Here's our research for Galaxy of Terror. Back in August 1980, A New World announces Planet Horrors in a trio of sci-fi projects. It says in this news clip, Corman has plans for three additional sci-fi movies: Planet of Horrors, suggested by Alien; Journey Beyond This Galaxy, from an Alfred Bester script; and Nightfall, from an Isaac Asimov short story. That's what he was looking to make. So he was trying to go pretty heavy into sci-fi after Battle Beyond the Stars. In fact, Corman said in that same month in 1980, we put out Battle Beyond the Stars last summer and it's done well. Now we've got Journey Beyond the Galaxy at $7 million and Planet of Horrors, which is budgeted at $5 million. You can't make them as cheap because audiences want good special effects, but we've just built our own special effects studio to keep costs down and meet our own deadlines. Everybody else is totally backed up. People want sci-fi and they're going to get it. Now, of course, even with United Artists stepping in to help distribute this movie overseas, the film's actual budget is more like $1.8 million. It's nowhere near $5 million, but that was Corman. He always would speak about movies having an inflated budget because he wanted people to think he spent some money when he didn't. By the way, the other two sci-fi films that I just mentioned, they were still in the mix in January of 1981, a few months later, along with another film that actually would get made. In this news article, it says New World Pictures has plans to release four films in 1981 with outer space themes: Planet of Horrors, Kane of Dark Planet, which would get made a couple years later and get released as The Warrior and the Sorceress, which we talked about on this podcast with David Carradine, Journey Beyond This Galaxy, and on a perhaps higher plane, Nightfall, drawn from a futuristic tale by Isaac Asimov. Nightfall, in the 1981 guide from New World Pictures, is right there. That's how much they thought they were going to make Nightfall. It was in the guide. They have art, they have the whole thing, based on the award-winning science fiction story by Isaac Asimov, and they would eventually make the movie. Julie Corman produced the film for Concord New Horizons in 1988.
Is it good?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Do we have to watch it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, at some point we're going to watch it. Yeah. This started filming top of 1981, possibly March, which this gets released like end of the summer or July. So March it's fast. Filming, shooting. They shot this movie at the Lumberyard studio that Roger was talking about earlier, where they had shot Battle Beyond the Stars. But also, because of the size of the sets, they also had to shoot at a different studio. Actually, it was at an abandoned Beacons storage warehouse that was scheduled for demolition. I think that's where they built the giant pyramid set.
Hmm.
And because they had too many sets, they couldn't shoot it all at once in there. The DP, Jacques Haitkin, he would actually go on to reunite with Robert Englund for Nightmare on Elm Street's 1 and 2 and shoot other classic films that we've discussed on this podcast, like The Hidden, Wishmaster, and The Silence of the Hams. Okay, we did not talk about that one, but we did talk about Silence of the Lambs. But he was actually picked by Corman because, speaking of Don Knotts, because he had shot The Private Eyes with Don Knotts and Tim Conway, and that had been one of New World's most successful films of the previous year. So they also, whereas another thing that they shot on that stage, which Robert Englund discusses in New World: An Oral History, Volume 2, which is that Roger rented out the stage for like a German watch commercial. He says that they paid Roger a ton of money to use our set for a weekend or a Sunday to do this really high-tech futuristic German watch commercial. I heard that he made so much money, it either paid for our movie or it paid for all the sets.
Good on him.
Wow.
Yeah. So Roger loved to get a good deal out of everything. So he was not just shooting this movie, but he was just using it for tons of other things as well, which is very much his way.
It's really admirable. Mm-hmm. Especially now, as the industry is where it is, and like trying to figure out how to create art in this new world that we're existing in, you look at someone like Roger Corman, and like, you know, they were always finding a way when seemingly there was no way. Like, All right, Monday through Friday we're shooting Galaxy of Terror, Saturday and Sunday, German watches.
Seriously, yeah.
This movie was initially released as Mind Warp, An Infinity of Terror, in July 1981, which is a terrible title that they within weeks they quickly retitle and they go back to the original title of the script, which is Planet of Horrors, which was released alongside movies like Condor Man at the time. Yeah, Condor Man. Oh my gosh. Which, Mark, you and I saw in the movie theater.
Yeah, we did.
And then, of course, it was then re-released because that title didn't work. So eventually they re-release it as Galaxy of Terror, as we know and love it. And that is it.
Wow.
That
is
Galaxy of Terror.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a trip. What a trip we've been on.
Yeah.
What a journey.
What? And that's what working here at this company is all about.
Oh.
It's a journey that we're all on together. We're a crew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the success, all of us.
Yes.
It's all of us. We have to get through it. No man or woman left behind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's actually a terrifying experience. And, no, we're not coming to get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then
yeah.
you are absolutely left behind.
Yeah. We need to take off. If you do go down, we will forget you. Mm-hmm. But if you do not go down, we want you to succeed because we don't succeed unless you all succeed.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Okay?
Yeah.
Great job, team.
Great job.
You know what? As we round into this weekend, we still have another day tomorrow. So tomorrow we still need to come into the office.
Still
need to work. Mm-hmm. And then enjoy a nice long weekend. That's not to say Monday. We do have to come in Monday. But enjoy. Mm-hmm. Make the weekend long, okay? Mm-hmm. Make the 2 days. Mm-hmm. Stretch it out as best you can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Use your skills to make it long. However you want to do that.
It's also Diane's birthday, and for Diane, we got you a bukla. So, you have to take it. You have to take it.
Yeah.
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 We need you to take this.
Mm-hmm. Carl had it in the storage closet, and we have to clear out that storage closet. It's been in there for a long time.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't know if it works. I don't have the power cord.
Yeah. It's massive.
Julie Corman came into the office and was like, we have to get rid of that.
Yeah.
We must get rid of that.
That's
out. We must take that out.
That's
it.
We're getting rid of it.
You have to take it.
I've read it's a collector's item. So, you know.
Don't show Kaz the power cord. If you find the power cord, don't show it to Kaz. He's terrified of it.
Yeah.
Oh. They were relieved when he went down, really. They were just like, why did that guy get picked? Tarek, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us and talking about this movie late into the night. Tell us, everybody, what's going on with you. Let everybody know what's going on, where they can find you.
Yeah. Finn, thank you. It's always a blast coming to play with you guys and talk about movies, man, and laugh. I always, my thighs always end up hurting the next day because I laugh so much on the podcast. So great. You can find me at Tarek R. Davis on the socials. I'm not on Threads, but I'm pretty much everywhere else. And we've made a short film called We're Not in Harlem Anymore. We got into multiple festivals. We haven't made that announcement yet. Thank you so much. These people here helped make that happen. And we will be making more announcements about showtimes and the future of that project very soon.
Yeah, awesome. Follow Tarek on the socials so you can keep up with that. We cannot wait. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely amazing. And if you want to follow us and you want to listen to our other episodes where Tarek has come on and talked about Android, not only that, but he came and helped us talk about the Marvel movies, the MCU of these the 70s and 80s. And so check out those episodes. You can do all that at our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com, where you can find our episodes, interviews, t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt, it helps support the show. You can buy a t-shirt like this one right here that I'm wearing, which has New World Pictures on it. That's where you can find everything about us. We'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description